imagine being a shareholder in Tesla and not wanting Elon running the company. Like, what is wrong with you?
I think if this gets approved, I think the stock is going to pop to all-time highs.
Workplaces are designed to be repetitive by design, which is a perfect place to put a robot to work.
We've also never seen anything grow as fast. Like, it's growing like 3 times as fast as the internet. Like, 10% of all Earth uses ChatGPT already on a weekly basis. And it was invented like three years ago.
It's going to remove the friction to be a human. That's the beautiful thing about this technology.
I think it's coming a lot faster than people think, and it's going to be a lot weirder than people think. I have a hot Tesla prediction to get.
Yeah.
A juicy one, which is, I mean, the stock has been moving and bubbling up in anticipation of this, because I think exactly like what you said, this has been the biggest overhang on the stock. So I think if this gets approved, I think the stock is going to pop to all-time highs. Not that I don't like to get too much into the short term predictions, but I kind of feel this, like, I think it's going to kind of be like a really exciting moment once this gets approved, because I feel like this is like the last thing kind of hanging over people's heads. So,
yeah.
And I think that's why the stock's been moving, is people are kind of seeing the writing on the wall.
Gotcha. Yeah. This morning it was like 472, I think, last time I checked. What is it at? 466. So it has been running these last few days for sure. I don't know. Like, part of me is also like, you know, there's so much buy the rumor, sell the news, like buy the event, sell the event kind of thing with Tesla. Like, we've seen it over and over and over again. But I agree with you that this comp package getting, you know, it's going to, I feel very strongly that it's going to get approved without much trouble come this Thursday. The sort of, if you look at the previous comp plan that Elon had, with his targets, he was able to fulfill those targets much quicker than people realized. And these targets allowed the company to become extremely valuable. And in the same exact token, this new comp package is going to do the same exact thing as well. I think that the thing that I'm trying to be like more grounded on is, if you know, and I'm curious to get your take here, if you think about the rollout of Robotaxi, you think about the rollout of FSD, humanoid robots, to me, it feels like Optimus at scale is probably still at least 3 years away, just from the vibes I'm getting. And then on the last earnings call, we got guidance from Elon that they're really a 3 million unit run rate is, well, from the vehicle side, is going to take about 24 months to get there. And so the earnings has to come from energy, FSD, Robotaxi in that time period. So how much additional earnings are we going to get from that? Or is the stock market just going to say, we know where you're going to get there, we're going to give you a 500 PE. Screw it. We're going to give you 1,000 PE, right? How are you thinking about that equation?
That's a great point. And I think the PE almost doesn't matter, because nobody's buying Tesla for the earnings today. So that's why if you're looking and basing everything on the earnings today, then you're going to get kind of mixed up with looking at the PE ratios. The one thing about Optimus that's interesting to me is this V3 one. It seems like they kind of like stutter stepped and it was delayed a little, but now it's like they kind of took longer to develop V3, and now it's turned into something that seems like it will actually be very functional or practical, because based on what they're saying about the production lines, it sounds like they're actually trying to get a decent amount of these built. So I don't feel like they would be building production lines for this if they didn't intend on using it somehow. So for me, it seems like this V3 Optimus, whether it's just in the Tesla factory itself, to me, that will be a big milestone, whether or not, you know, it's 2029 till they actually deliver to customers or anything. Mm. But seeing Optimus in the factory, I mean, we already have all these crazy videos of Optimus walking around the Cybertrucks. But so I think as that increases, there will be kind of, the people will add more and more value to that like side of the business and continue pricing it into the stock. But I'm kind of curious what you think. Like, where's Tesla's head at with V3? Like, how much do you think they can do? It feels like they've been like kind of secretive about it.
Yeah.
And it's going to have like this crazy unveil, which sounds like more than what they were doing for the previous types of robots.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say they're going to sell it, but I also don't want to say they're not going to sell it. And it's, so to me, that seems like very, very exciting. And you think about stock market terms, I mean, the stock market, that we're only 6 months away from that Q1 2026 unveil, like this is coming up around the corner. So, I think that could potentially be another big catalyst to like cement the AI robotic story.
I think that's a very interesting question. I do think there's going to be a market reaction when Tesla proves the human or robot is real. I think the there is a lot of hype around just the general AI thing, but also the human or robot piece, right? We saw X1 unveil their bot that's going to start delivering, they say, by the end of 2026. I actually put down a $200 deposit for that when they announced it, because I'm curious to see what it's going to be like. I highly doubt it's going to be in any way, shape, or form truly useful and autonomous for at least another couple of years, you know?
The Neo you put down a deposit for?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Because I was debating with my friends of which one of us was going to put down the deposit.
It's $200 fully refundable. Who cares? Like, you know, it's like, all right, I'll just, you know, I'll return it if I don't think.
Dude, that's a tax write-off. The amount of videos that you could make.
I'm
going
to use it
thing,
for my business. I got stuff to move around in my business. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got stuff that I could use it for, you know, and also for just content. It's going to be incredible. But it has a VR, it has a clause in there that says somebody's going to beam into your human or robot to do tasks so it can learn how to do those tasks.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to guess that that's going to take a long time for the human or robot to actually be as capable as it needs to be. Plus, I highly doubt the actuators and the mechanical systems are going to be where they need to be, right? Whereas Tesla's approach has been, for the last couple versions of Optimus, they're trying to hone in that supply chain that's custom built for their human or robot solution, whereas everyone else seems like they're trying to use off the shelf and more like slightly modified, not as, you know, not a brand new supply chain. There are going to be things that are going to have to be built for these human or robots for other companies, but it's not this extreme approach that Tesla has taken, like the vehicle, right? They're something very similar with the Model S and the Model 3 and the Cybercab, where they're coming in and they're saying, okay, we're going to build this from the ground up. We're going to build the supply chain for this specialized solution for this thing that we're trying to solve for. But that the amount of complexity that's going to entail from a supply chain perspective is quite high, I think. And I think that's going to prevent them from reaching, say, a million unit run rate per year for Optimus until early 2030, if I were to guess, 2031, 2032. But I think by then, you know, the thing that's probably going to happen is if I were to guess is, you know, if they have a successful demo next quarter in Q1, where they're like, this is Optimus V3, you know, it's built on the foundation we've built for the from FSD that we, you know, that now we're going to be, you know, going into AI5, you know, AI6 here in the next couple of years, and all the data we've collected, all the things we've built for this thing to learn how to move around the world and do useful tasks and all that stuff. Look at this. Look at how, not only how it looks and the supply chain that we've built around it, but it integrates with Grok. So you're going to be able to talk to it no problem. It's going to listen to commands. It's going to be able to generalize. Oh, and by the way, this is already doing useful work in our factories and our warehouses. I think something like that sets the tone, you know, for sure. I think that's going to capture the imagination of Wall Street, because they're going to be like, okay, so if they're able to sell a million of these per year at a cost of $25,000 per unit, and they would already in theory have a sort of a model related to Tesla's autonomous embodied systems or physical systems like Robotaxi that says, look, here's a Cybercab I can build for $25,000, $20,000 per unit. And then over the life of the vehicle, this thing's going to generate $200,000 of profit, $300,000, whatever that number is. It's a, you know, it's a recurring revenue model. And all of my expenses are already baked into the company, because all the work that we're doing for the Cybercab also goes to the bot. And so they can just be like, okay, so a million of these is probably going to be whatever, X number of dollars of profit per year. And what's the TAM for a human or robot? Insanely gigantic. And then the math starts to happen, right? So the question becomes is like, how far into the future is the stock market willing to price in? And given the likelihood that we're going into a more like loose monetary policy here in the next couple of years, with interest rates coming down, you know, the AI boom stuff is going hog wild. We're in a competition with China under a Trump presidency. Trump's going to want to open the floodgates for money to flow everywhere. I think it's going to set the stage for a lot of people with a lot of money to throw money at companies that look like they're going to do well in the next 5 to 10 years. And I think that's where Tesla's going to benefit a lot, or it should. So that's my thesis. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I think the one thing that I've been waiting for Tesla's NVIDIA moment is NVIDIA's got the earnings. Tesla's not going to have the earnings for a while. So that'll be interesting to watch. In terms of the price point of the bot, you got me thinking of like, the price of the Neo seems so low. Like I was kind of blown away by it. And I was like, I don't think, maybe it's like they're selling it at a little bit of a loss or something to try and, you know, get off the ground or something and generate hype and become a leader. And maybe that data is so important that they think they can get the flywheel going and start running with it. Actually, I think it was interesting because I feel like MKBHD's review of the Neo got like a bunch of hate or like everyone. And I kind of actually MKBHD, he's such a nice guy. Like he's a really cool guy and he does great content. Like he's a big inspiration to me. And it's funny that when you get so big, it's like no matter what you say, people will roast you no matter what. So I kind of feel like that's happening. And then I was like, I didn't watch his video, but then my friends and I were sitting around the couch and we all watched his Neo review because we were like, oh, like, let's see what MKBHD says about it. And I thought it was super on point. And he acknowledges it and he like gives this analogy for Tesla of like Tesla's secret weapon has been all the beta testers, all that miles of data. Like that's why they're trying to do that. And so I thought it, and even to see him lay out that analogy is I was like, oh, this is so interesting. And they're probably going to need to do a very similar process with the bot. And so I wonder if they're going to be like, I feel like 25,000 just seems ridiculous. Like they should be selling it for like a quarter million or 500,000, you know? And then they're probably going to have to work really closely with people like to perfect these tasks. And it'll probably only be able to do a very specific set of tasks well. Like Andre Karpathy was saying something about how the bridge from demo to functionality is so massive with these humanoid robots, like even the Figure robot, which looks cooler in demo videos, but they might be scripted. It's not folding the clothes well. Like if I folded the clothes as well as the Figure robot, like my girlfriend would probably break up with me and be like, you didn't even fold them. You didn't even fold them. Like, so I think there's going to be a big, and even FSD, like it, I think 2016, I want to say was when they did the first FSD beta or something
that
like that.
That was Navigator on Autopilot, I think 2016. Yeah.
Oh, that was okay. Maybe like
2018, 2019, something like that sounds right. Yeah.
So,
thank you to the sponsor of this podcast, Rebellionaire. Rebellionaire partners with Tesla investors who have at least $2 million in Tesla stock to reach their financial goals. Other investment firms might look at your Tesla position and think, wow, you have way too much. This is way too risky. But Rebellionaire actually embraces the long-term potential of a company like Tesla. They'll also look to maximize your profits by employing different tactics like selling covered calls, adding or trimming, etc. And the Rebellionaire team, which includes Bradford Ferguson and Matt Smith, they do this by spending a lot of time analyzing Tesla the company in very novel and unique ways. They've done things like cross-country FSD trips, the self-driving suite that Tesla has. They've done a lot of novel research around the energy sector and the humanoid robot and AI sector as well. Make sure to go to rebellionaire.com/Farzad, rebellionaire.com/Farzad, and that's how they'll know that I sent you. Thank you very much.
And we're still not at fully unsupervised. And so the robot's going to have to do things unsupervised to be useful. And that's like what MKBHD was saying. It's like, well, if this expert has to be watching it doing VR and you constantly have to be training it, like it's not actually helping. So I think there's going to be a very long process with these humanoids of this kind of back and forth iterative loop. Everyone's going to be making fun of all the non-tech people are going to be like laughing at tech people for like trying to, it's like you're, you know, your robot spent, I was washing parsley yesterday cooking. And I was like, how long would it take a robot to wash this parsley? Like really well. And like actually dry it. Like it would take so long. Like,
yeah.
But like, you got to separate the leaves from the stem. And so I'm like, when people start, I think it's going to be super funny. Cause they're gonna be like, oh yeah, I have my robot training on parsley cutting and drying. He cuts one cup of parsley for 9 hours. And people are gonna be like, you paid $500,000 for something that goes 20 times. Yeah. Like, but that's going to have to happen. And so I just think that'll kind of be a funny moment in time where we're training our robots and they look dumber than us for a while. And then it also makes you realize how kind of each person is like a LLM. Yeah. Like when you start thinking about that and how good they are at certain tasks and how long it took to train them, it almost gives you a new appreciation of like what humans can do and how much our brains are calculating like physics and all of these things that we don't even realize.
100%.
And so
I think that's, know. You know, that humans are LLMs comments is like a fascinating one because I've been watching my son grow up. He's almost a year and a half now. And like watching him learn how to walk, watching him learn how to come down the stairs, he like automatically learned how to come down. So he had this technique where he would initially he was trying a bunch of different ones. He was just scared. He's like just basically carrying me down the stairs. I'm like, okay. But eventually he figured out that if he goes feet first, belly down, he can just like basically swim backwards down the stairs, and he was doing it like lightning. And then he learned how to walk. And then he learned how to walk fast, and now he's basically like semi-running around. And then he's like, wait, this is way more efficient to get around. Let me try this with the stairs. So he just the one day he approached the stairs, and he was like, he looked at me, he went like, eh. I'm like, what? And he reaches out his hand. He goes like, eh. I'm like, oh, you want me to hold your hand? So I put out my hand, and then he used me to walk down the stairs. And he just learned this on his own, right? But that's his LLM.
Wow.
The human brain is unbelievable. It is crazy. But your parsley example is a perfect one that says the generalized way that a human or robot has to execute things in the home for it to be useful is so hard. And it's a lot of a hardware problem, right? Because you need a lot of like actuation and stuff that's very fine and small, and it has to be able to make really small movements, and it has to be very tactile and careful and stuff. But the bigger piece of it is the brain. The brain is really going to be the huge separator long term for that robot to learn how to wash parsley effectively. Now, the speed of washing the parsley over time is not going to be that important, because it's like, okay, usually it would take me half an hour to, or like an hour to cook something for myself, right? But if the human or robot can just cook from the second I, you know, in the middle of the night, I don't care. As long as it's not making a lot of noise, I don't care. So as long as it has the time to execute the thing by the time that I want it done by, I think the time of the task being complete is irrelevant. The question becomes, how many tasks can that robot do in a day that becomes a function of how quickly it can complete tasks? And that is something that over time, I think the AI will just get better and better at doing it quicker and quicker. So I think completion of a task is going to be done earlier than people think. But in the home, it's going to take much longer than in a workplace, because workplaces are designed to be repetitive. They're designed so that the dumbest person on the planet can do them, okay, by design, which is a perfect place to put a robot to work. So I think what's obviously going to happen here, and this is why like I wanted to put the down payment for the X1 robot, because my thesis is that the home solutions for robots are much farther away than the work solutions for robots, okay? I think the home ones, the safety implications of having a human or robot walking around your house when you have children or pets, and if that thing, God forbid, falls on one of your kids or falls on one of your pets and injures or worse, that is going to be a type of liability and a type of press that none of these companies want. And you have to be at a place from a safety perspective that's so high that the chance of that happening is basically impossible. And I think we're really far away from that. So I would expect these companies to be much more prevalent in businesses than in homes. I think businesses come way first, and then homes maybe like mid-2030s, if I were to guess. Maybe early 2030.
Yeah. And I almost feel like there's going to be a hype. Like Tesla takes its time to perfect things. In many ways, that's almost like an Apple-esque trait. Like they don't rush into something. Like they want to make it right. But I think a lot of the humanoid companies are taking the opposite approach. Like they don't have the luxury of what Tesla's doing. Like they have VCs, they have investors, they got to show traction, they got to show orders. So I think there may be like a rush to deliver a lot of these humanoids before they're ready and practical. And that could cause a sort of like, there's going to be like a overhype and then under deliver and then normalize kind of technology curve, 100%. Like all bubbles. And I think we may be in like the very early stages of what could be a massive AI boom, which will be started by a bubble. And we could be in like the very early bubble ups of that, or not bubble ups.
That was good,
bubble, but you get it. like Nvidia, the more and more I keep thinking about Nvidia, like Wall Street seems to not be able to wrap their head around how big Nvidia, how much profits they have, how every single company is trying to spend as much money as possible on Nvidia. Like OpenAI, this whole talk of the Sam Altman IPO thing. Did you see him on the clip with Brad Gerstner? That was
a good look.
Crazy. Yeah. Not a good look. Not a good look. Like just not a classy kind of response, but I don't know. Maybe he's tired of
people
annoying him.
He's under pressure because he knows his valuation banks on revenue, and you can only grow revenue by so much. And so he's, in a lot of different ways, I think he has stretched the company's valuation way too thin for what it can do right now. And I think when people saw ChatGPT 5, like the jump from GPT 5 to GPT 4, in my opinion, wasn't that large. And I think, and you look at Sora 2 launch, who cares? Nobody's using it anymore. I feel like OpenAI is starting to run into these. Anyway, I don't want to derail this conversation. Keep going. Sorry.
No, but I like the AI because I think it's all related because OpenAI is basically saying we're going to spend so much money on these NVIDIA chips. The reason why they want to IPO is because they have so much an appetite for capital. So what I think is going to happen is OpenAI is going to $1 trillion, $2 trillion. It's probably going to double the second they list. And that's going to cause like this flood of AI robotics companies. And that's going to be sort of the next phase of this bubble is like the OpenAI IPO is going to be such a huge part of it. And they are needing to spend like hundreds and hundreds of billions on the data centers. And another thing I thought was so interesting is that Tesla and XAI with Elon, like they do everything in-house, they're actually good at building the data centers. And that's why he got praise from Jensen about setting it up in 19 days. So OpenAI wasn't in that business. They're not in the business of operating and running data centers. They were letting other people do it, but now they're getting into that business. So I think it's the shifts that are, and then the reason why OpenAI and Sam Altman are so interesting is because with $13 billion in revenue, he has $1.4 trillion in like chip commitments or whatever. That's what they were saying. So on one hand, you could say that's way out of whack. On the other hand, he's managed to secure, everyone's trying to secure as many GPUs. So in some ways, his job is to stretch the valuation as high as possible to secure the most GPUs. So what he's doing is actually super strategic to try and get out, like he almost has to do it to try and get ahead. So I sort of see this weird game theory of the world's best capital raisers, Sam Altman and Elon Musk, spending all on one thing, which is this NVIDIA chips, because we don't have a more efficient way or better chip for now. And so, but this sort of arms race, I don't see stopping. Like I see it just keep kind of one upping. And I think that's a big reason that I realized that XAI shouldn't combine with Tesla, because they're probably going to be losing hundreds of billions too, before they ever even think about making a profit. So we're in this kind of very interesting mode where everyone's using AI, the AI companies aren't making profit, but, and they're kind of jumping 10 years ahead into the spending. And so I think something similar is going to happen with humanoids. What we're seeing with LLMs might have to happen again with humanoid robots to train them. And that's not something I've seen discussed too much, is how much CapEx will it really take to train Optimus? Will it take a lot? So I think we're setting up for, we've never seen this kind of spend in technology. For so long, technology has been so profitable. All these companies like Google, AI, Amazon, like piling up cash on the balance sheet. And now they're having to dip into the cash into the balance sheet to kind of keep up in this arms race. So I feel like it's just kind of an interesting moment.
Is your thesis that PE is going to be a dumb metric for the next 5 to 10 years? Because it's not, by default, the earnings and the revenues are going to be so delayed because we have to build the pipelines. We have to build the foundation of artificial intelligence by making these data centers and making these systems actually start to spool up and reach a critical mass to be able to generate the things we're looking for. Is your thesis here that the bubble is just getting, I mean, I think you said at the beginning, the bubble is just getting started, right? So I guess by default, that means that PEs are about to get crazy, like really crazy.
PEs are about to get crazy, but there's also a lot of interest. Like I was listening to the BG2 podcast. So NVIDIA's earnings are skyrocketing. Their PE is not that crazy, but how legit are their earnings? Like how much circular accounting is going on? Like OpenAI gets an investment from Microsoft, then they have to spend on X amount of Microsoft. Like Microsoft invests in OpenAI with cloud credits that they don't
even
put
NVIDIA
money into.
Is like a separate thing though. Like NVIDIA is like NVIDIA is the monopoly at the chip layer. Right. I'm talking about everything else on top of the chip layer. So I'm talking about your Teslas, your Amazons, your Googles, your all these other companies that are going to use NVIDIA. So NVIDIA's Jensen has to be the most like this position he's in is unbelievable, because the way he allowed for the ecosystem to exist for AI to be built on top of it is nuts. Like it's crazy. But I guess I'm talking more about. Yeah, your Teslas, your Googles, your Amazons, your OpenAIs, all these other companies are going to be bolted on top of NVIDIA that And maybe not Tesla so much, because Tesla already makes profit and Robotaxi is going to make a lot of money. So maybe we set them to the side, but everybody else. That's kind of what I'm talking about more than anything. Yeah.
I do. Honestly, yeah. I think even with Tesla, like, I think we're seeing the start of people wanting to get into this like AI revolution. And so, and it's interesting because everyone's like, oh, NVIDIA is like 7 to 8% of the S&P. That's so crazy. That's so out of whack. Like, I'm like, well, the trajectory we're on, it's about to be like 25% of the S&P. Maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows? Like this trend of a few companies dominating is only getting solidified more and more. And the gap kind of continues to widen between like the who's who and who's actually in the sport of AI. They say it's like the sport of kings. Like only so few people have the luxury of spending to be able to keep up in this sport. And I think those winners are always going to get like the halo effect and have like huge earnings ratios, like OpenAI. Like I do think there's a lot of reasons to be bullish on OpenAI. Like, even though people are skeptical, it's like, okay, a $1 trillion company with 13 or 20 billion in revenue seems so crazy, but we've also never seen anything grow as fast. Like, it's growing like 3 times as fast as the internet. Like 10% of all Earth uses ChatGPT already on a weekly basis. And it was invented like three years ago. So I think the market's kind of having this crazy reckoning right now. And it's hard for Wall Street to wrap its head around how big this is. But I don't know. I think Tesla continues to benefit from it and is walking this very interesting line of like not overhyped, I would say, but they have just the fair amount of hype. Like, it's overvalued based on the current earnings, but if you take into account CyberCab and Optimus, like, I feel like it's very, very fairly priced. But I could see it like running away with us. Like, maybe Tesla could easily start getting ahead of itself here after Optimus V3 unveils, stock runs to like $2,000 or something. And it gets a little bit ahead of itself.
I think that's the likeliest scenario, honestly. And you know, I don't want to, you know, not investment or financial advice for anybody listening, but I think that is the likeliest scenario, because the premise that Tesla doesn't have a foundation that will enable it to generate massive amounts of profit from what they've built from the last 7 to 8 years, I think that can be put to bed like crazy. And just look at V12, V13, V14 of FSD. Look at the progress. Look at the way that they've been able to release a robotaxi network in Austin and the Bay Area. We haven't really heard of any issues, knock on wood. It's going pretty smoothly. They need to go a lot faster. You know, Elon said, you know, by the end of the year, we're going to get to 500 cars in Austin and 1,000 cars in the Bay Area. I don't think you get there without yanking the safety riders, because it's like, how are you going to hire 1,500 people in like a month and a half? You know, like, that's great. I don't think that in properly trained and all that stuff. So they have to be without a safety rider and driver. So they'll yank those. And then all of a sudden you have a blueprint that says, look at this. I went from non-existent 9 months ago to having as many active drivers on the Austin metro area than Uber. And that's the craziest thing I learned today. In Uber, Uber has about between 300 to 600 active drivers in the United States, in the Austin metro area at any given time. About 500.
Really?
It seems low. You do the math, it's at average. On peak, it's like 1,200 Uber drivers around. I mean, Uber drivers is a small percentage of all the vehicles on the road, right? So from a rideshare perspective, if you just kind of sit down and do the math, it's maybe slightly low, but let's say it's double that number. Maybe say it's 1,000 on average and 3,000 at peak. Okay. That's 1 day of production or whatever. So, and right there, Tesla's going to be able to say, look at what I have. Like, this is undeniable. And this thing is going to make buku money, because it cost me $30,000 per unit to build this thing. And these things are just going to drive around for years, generating profit for us, no problem. And it's going to be a consistent experience. It's going to be comfortable. It's going to be cheaper than everybody else. It's going to be safer than everybody else. And then that becomes the thesis of like, look at what I did. And this is the last 7 or 8 years. Now scale this up to everything else, you know, to the entire world eventually, and then start giving me a valuation for that. So, and nobody else is, and then on top of that, the cash flow they're going to be making from that part of the business is going to fund Optimus. And the cash flow they're generating from a growing energy sector that is going to power the AI system is also feeding into that future growth for the human or robot and the robotaxi and all that stuff. So they have this very unique flywheel that they've built from the last 7 or 8 years that people just haven't been paying attention to. you know, let's say the broader market hasn't trusted in a sense, because they're like, well, this is this the it's kind of rich. The valuation is kind of rich. And like you said, I just love the way you framed it. They're going to benefit from this AI boom, because the AI boom is going to allow for people's imaginations to actually open up and then look at Tesla and being like, holy shit, they have been doing it this whole time. Yeah. And then curious to see how the market rewards them once they realize that.
And it's so interesting, because I feel like we often, like, there's a lot of Tesla skeptics who are always like, oh, people are hating on Tesla. No one gets it. No one's getting the vision. No one's seeing the potential. But Tesla always trades at a massive premium. They're worth all more than car companies combined. Like, they've always had this valuation. So I feel like if people kind of stop listening and just watch the actual data, like, that's like everything else is noise. But the share price is trading every day. That's a true free market of what people are willing to pay. And it is huge. Like, the market is seeing it. They're pricing it in. They're giving Tesla the value. They're saying, you know, whether that guy at a dinner party is like, well, GM said they're going to do a robot. It's like, okay, well, why are they worth $30 billion and Tesla's $1.5 trillion? Maybe same level of earnings. Because, you know, so the market has already decided is way smarter than people give it credit for, I feel like. Like, it's always kind of 10 steps ahead. And honestly, I actually bought a little bit of Tesla stock today. You're getting me hyped. And I was thinking on this CyberCab, because part of me has been thinking like, oh, we have this, you know, Optimus, we'll keep the stock going. But I almost feel like we don't even, like, I wasn't even thinking about the CyberCab. Like, they have the perfect setup in between Optimus launching. Like, energy and robotaxi are going to be this perfect, like, increasing compounding earnings power growth that we're going to have coming into that. So it's kind of an unbelievable time for Tesla, where so many of these things are coming together. Like, Elon saying reality is accelerating on the Joe Rogan podcast. And I thought that was so interesting, because I feel, I'm like, I only feel like that when I'm following Elon's universe. Like, it doesn't seem like that outside of it. And I feel like it's because all of his companies have reached a critical mass of where it's not just like, oh, we're getting the prototype. Like, they're going, you know, one to N, and they're really disrupting and like causing massive change. And then the more momentum they get, the faster they roll. It's like downhill with Tesla, with SpaceX, with Neuralink, with XAI. And so I feel like that's what's happening with the Elon universe right now, is it's accelerating on itself. And that's, and Tesla is like, you know, the sort of center of that. And I was kind of curious, you know, because we can talk about the Optimus far away, but CyberCab, you're in ground zero over there. I'm kind of curious what's been happening since launch. Like, are people taking it? Because they did the app. Like, are normal people that you know getting the app? Are they using it? What do you?
There's a fair number of people that are, they're like just regular people that download the app that were in the region. They got approved to use it. My brother used it. You know, my brother's not in like a cycle like me following Tesla every day, but he got access to the Robotaxi app. He just used it a couple days ago with some coworkers and asked them how did it go. He's like, it was awesome. It was awesome, like super convenient, cheap, right? Tesla's biggest problem right now in this area is that the geofence is too big for the number of cars they have. So I've been trying to hail it. So I every time I come down to the city, I try to park on the edge of the geofence and then hail a robotaxi to drive into downtown, so I don't have to pay for parking downtown, because the cost of the robotaxi is less than me parking downtown. So it just makes sense for me to just park at a Planet Fitness or whatever. Or like now they are they opened it up to the domain. The domain is this really cool area of North Austin that's like has all the shops and restaurants and stuff. But they have all these like free parking decks. And I was going to park there and just hail one. And then I just couldn't get a car. And then the one time I got a 30-minute wait for a car. I'm like, okay, fuck. You know, I'll do it. They just made the geofence bigger. I'll make a video out of it. Canceled. Couldn't get a car. So they're at the point now where they have to expand the fleet. But it does seem like if you are downtown, it's much easier for you to get the car, because that's where most of the cars are going to be driving around. But they haven't solved for the outskirts. They haven't of the geofence. So I think that's that 500 units that they're going to get to by the end of the year is going to solve for that for sure. But then by then, I also expect them to make the geofence even bigger, to start getting into the suburbs. So get into Cedar Park and Pflugerville and Round Rock maybe, or, you know, Kyle Buda and, you know, maybe Bastrop, maybe Georgetown, all that stuff. And then at that point, you have a gigantic geofence that captures 2 million people roughly. But I would expect them to get there by next year for sure. You know, because that's they're uniquely they're uniquely positioned to be able to do that. So it's going really well. I haven't really heard of many issues at all. Again, knock on wood. It does. I know they have, I think, a handful of recorded accidents that they have to sort of report with NHTSA, but it's unclear if they were at fault, the severity of the accident. The rate of accident per mile is like something like 64,000. I think in Waymo's might be like 20 or 25,000. I forget what the number is, but it seems like within the scale, but those accidents are happening with somebody in the car. So it's like, okay, so like, but again, we don't know if who was at fault. But from everything that I can tell, is like it's going pretty good, given everything. I haven't heard of any serious injuries. I haven't heard of any deaths, thankfully. And but they also haven't been they have been doing highways, but with a safety driver behind the wheel instead of a so we'll see where it goes. But it's going pretty good. Yeah,
and I feel like it's interesting to hear that the wait time is not as good in the outskirts, because I feel like there's so much calibration with these models. Like, we like to think, you know, Uber gets everything gets disrupted right away. I think the flip side of that is like these companies have built a lot of very cool, powerful technology. And like the whole way Uber works with this matching system is like insanely complicated. Like Uber, you got to give them credit. Like any city you are, you call it in 2 minutes, it's there. It's so convenient. It's so practical. That's such, and even Lyft has really struggled with that. Like that's why I feel like they fell off. So it's so hard to keep that network density to where it's actually usable on a super good way. So that kind of makes, I'm glad you said that. And I'm kind of curious.
That's an
about,
easy problem to solve.
You know, like, yeah, it's, but it's also like, you know, I guess they're still in beta and this is why it's not in beta, but when you're, but there's no way to slice it of like a 30-minute wait means it's not usable, which means you know, like there's big room for improvement. And so that's kind of what I keep wondering is like, I think they're just going super slow and cautious, but I do feel like Elon has been consistently super optimistic. So I'm kind of like reining in my expectations, but every time I rein in my expectations and I'm like, oh, it's going to take longer. And then Elon like does a new talk and he's like, we're going to have 1,000 cars by the end of the year. And then I get super hyped again. And I'm like, oh my God, they're going to do 1,000 cars by the end of the year. And then it's like,
this is why I think the Cybercab is going to have a steering wheel and pedal, FYI, but keep going.
So I know. I don't want to get into that.
Yeah. But so let me jump into your point. So I 100% agree with you, but I think their challenges, like let's say for the wait time, is a function of available vehicles at any given time in that area. That's a lot harder to do when you can't predict the number of drivers you're going to. But you have to predict the number of drivers you're going to have available to you at any given time, and have them in the right spot for them to get some sort of work. Whereas with a robotaxi network, these vehicles don't have feelings and they can work 24/7. And so the solution for these complex things that Uber has to work through is just add the car to the thing. Just put another car. And then, we don't have enough cars. Okay, just divert 5 minutes of production to the robotaxi. Okay. Now we have enough cars. So it's, and then you're like, oh, now we have too many cars. Okay, let's make the geofence bigger. Okay, let's sell these cars as used, whatever, right? This is the insane advantage that Tesla has, is that because of the technology, the complexity of solving these problems has gone down dramatically that Uber has had to solve, because they can just manufacture drivers at will. And so they're going to have different issues. You know, they're going to have, they're going to have to create depots for cleaning, depots for charging, the variable of allowing people to add their car to the network. I'm curious to see when that's going to go live and all that stuff. That's going to create a whole host of challenges. Are they going to self-insure? Are they going to give it to Lemonade to, you know, then Lemonade came out and said, hey, you know, we'll insure FSD for basically free. Okay, cool. So we'll see how they do that. They're going to have different challenges, but it's, you know, it's going to be born out of having a self-driving network, not so much a legacy type of challenge that Uber would have had to face. So from that perspective, all the challenges that exist today with Uber go away with a self-driving network, but then they'll have new challenges that they have to solve for, obviously.
Yeah, no, that's a great point of like, you kind of remove one half of the chicken or the egg problem if you can have so much of the supply. And I always thought it was so interesting about them talking about the engineering of the Cybercab, how it goes into like, you know, it's only designed for like 80 or 90 miles an hour's max speed. It's mostly designed for comfort. They're not putting a much, as much power into it. It doesn't need to go as fast. Like, I mean, it totally made sense, but I wasn't thinking on that level. It's like they've really designed something that's very different than the traditional Tesla cars we're used to, that is like faster than a Ferrari off the stoplight. Yeah. Like, it's going like crazy fast, crazy acceleration, crazy handling. So that was kind of interesting and surprising me. Like, it's more like a tiny bus than it is.
It's a pod.
Tiny car.
It's a personal pod.
A pod.
Yeah.
Yeah. Personal pod. And so, but I like that idea of they can just simply add one to the network. And I think they've optimized so much there on the cost level. Like, if they can sell a car for under 40 grand at profit now, then the CyberCab is really, they're really honing down those production costs to the level where I think they have a lot of leeway, because they're going to need to have a lot of leeway. Like, Uber's making a certain amount of profit, but maybe to start, Tesla has to have more cars. So there's kind of like some give and take on each level there. But interesting. Yeah, I guess it's, I think everyone's just like on the edge of their seat, because we all know it's going to come one day, that announcement where Elon's like, okay, the safety driver is gone. And now it's going to happen like that. But when do I think that's going to happen?
I have a theory.
Okay, well, what's up with Austin's weather right now?
It's very nice. It's like this is prime Austin weather. It's like mid 70s, low 80s, sunny every day.
Ooh, okay, maybe it's perfect. Because I was thinking, doesn't Austin have some weird snow
and like
things
January, February,
in the winter?
Yeah.
Okay. Because that could,
that's like, it's random.
Because I remember
that's like random. Yeah.
It's very random. Yeah. Because I thought that was another interesting component. Like, at first, it wouldn't really work in the rain, and then I actually took one in the rain, and it was working pretty well. So there's those things they have to do. But man, there's just it. I think when you're rolling out a business that's never been done before, there's so many unexpected things that it's just hard to. It's hard for Wall Street. It's hard for analysts to really think it through, because we have no comparison. We have no, you know, Waymo's the closest thing we have, and it's really hard to get info on any of their financials or anything. So I'm constantly in this back and forth of like, is Robotaxi gonna be way harder and super slow, or is it gonna be way faster and that this is just gonna take over instantly? Like, I feel like my conviction kind of keeps swaying one way or the other, and I don't have a strong opinion.
Yeah.
So I don't have confidence in an estimate.
Sure. That's a great cop out, Gally. Thanks. No, I think that's super fair. No, I mean, the way I think about it, like, I agree with you. I think the careful nature of it is going to have to be very important. But if Elon is being serious about 500 cars by the end of the year in Austin, those safety riders better be yanked on Thursday. Right? Thank you for approving my comp package. I would like to announce that when you leave this meeting, when you take a robotaxi, you will not have a safety rider in there. Or, you know, or hey, now when you arrive on Wednesday night, starting Thursday for our investor day, the safety riders are now removed from our robotaxi network in Austin.
Damn. See, that's one reason why my FOMO is pumping about this shareholder meeting, because I feel like this is truly an iconic meeting where we are voting if it's approved. Like, the vibe in that room when it gets announced is going to be, that's going to be one of the greatest moments in Tesla history. And it's just going to be such a cool moment where, I don't know, it's just going to be a huge win. Like, I love the feeling of this, where the shareholder meeting starts and Elon walks out and it is literally like, it's like a roar and it's like a rock concert. It is so fun. It is such a cool vibe. And Elon's like, like, I love you guys.
What's but you know, we have to survive like, that first half an hour of like, you know, like all these like voter or like investor voted on issues that we have to listen through, and like, oh my, just sitting there and just, you know, going through, and then the storm comes in. All right, here comes Elon. We improved this comp package. Here he comes. And it gets crazy.
And then I always feel like there's always like a bit of a letdown, because like it's over and then you're like, wait, it's over? Like, Elon's not hanging out with us all? Like, what the heck? Like, what's, he left?
Yeah,
like,
where? Yeah, 100%.
I feel like it's such a like, it's there's something really special about the Tesla shareholder community. And I feel like it started a big trend. Like, I really, when I started YouTubing, no one went to shareholder meetings. Like, this just was not a thing. Like, maybe they went to the Warren Buffett one, but no one, like, there was no lottery to get into the Tesla shareholder meeting. it was like you could just show up, and then people would, and then the next year, it was like the second year I went, they had to have an overflow room because like people actually wanted to show up to this thing. And so to see that blossom has been such a cool thing for Tesla. And if the institutions were in control of the company, they probably wouldn't be giving Elon this package. It's only because the retail owns it. So in many ways, that's why the Tesla shareholder meeting has a special place in my heart. It's very different than other ones, because you actually, it is shareholders who care about the company that are there. It's not just people that own it through these passive institutions. So I feel like it's going to be, I'm like super fingers crossed, because I think it's kind of in the bag, but I'm also
For sure.
You know, nothing's 100%. Done until it's done.
I'm 99.9% sure that this thing's done. I mean, it's like, imagine being a shareholder in Tesla and not wanting Elon running the company. Like, what is wrong with you? Okay. Like, these are the people that are voting on the company. You have to have a Tesla ownership to vote to not give Elon the comp package so the stock can go down 50%. It makes no sense. So that's number one. And then number two, when I said, when he went on his podcast spree late last week, I'm like, this dude's relaxed. You know, there's no other reason to sit in front of Joe Rogan for 3.5 hours and, you know, shoot the shit and talk about whatever, unless your mind is free, is clear. Okay. So I'm like, okay, so he's got it in the bag. I think the bigger thing I'm looking from this meeting, I think the Optimus robot demo is going to be sick. I think that's going to be, but it's not going to be V3. It's going to be V2.5 or whatever it is. So maybe we'll get some insight into what kind of tasks it can do. You know, like maybe they can say, hey, we actually are using this internally, and V3 is going to allow us to have a lot more of these robots, and they're going to be able to do these faster, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe that's some very cool insight we'll get into the removal of the safety rider and driver would be the perfect thing to do at this investor meeting to add a little bit of juice to what's going on. And then maybe they can announce a couple new areas around the country where they're putting robotaxi. I think that would be a sick thing to do. It's like, hey, you know, we're starting next week or starting, you know, whatever, we're going to start operating in Phoenix and Miami or in Orlando and whatever, Las Vegas or something. So there's opportunity for some cool things to happen in this meeting. What is the one thing you're looking forward to the most on this thing? The comp package?
The shareholder meeting? Yeah. I just think, and then also the XAI investment.
Oh yeah, that's an interesting one.
Not necessarily because of the financials, but just officially linking them together, I think is a super cool thing that has to be a grassroots movement from the shareholders, because Elon, it's too much of a conflict for him to do it. So I think that is a super important thing when we think about the brand of Optimus. Like this relationship with XAI, you know, is very important, and cementing it on a deeper level than just Elon runs both. Cause that's another thing I've been thinking is what happens to who controls the robot army after Elon? Like, how does he set that up? Is it just a free for all of Tesla's democratic process, and we're voting through, say, with our brokers to try to control what the robot army can do, right or wrong?
Not crazy.
Like, that's going to get weird. So that's another kind of interesting, like, layer two to all of this is like, what happens after that?
I think Tesla's turning into its own nation state.
Wow. So break that down. Because I kind of agree. And I think that companies are becoming bigger than countries in many ways. Like that's obviously
like the perfect example of that, you know, SpaceX will colonize Mars. So that they're the only one that's going to have the capacity to send as many rockets as they need. And it's going to be hooked up to an industry, Musk industry, that's going to provide the batteries. They're going to provide the solar panels. They're going to provide the communications networks. They're going to provide the labor with humanoids. They're going to provide the transportation with Teslas. Like every component to build out Mars is Musk industry. So Musk industry will be the ruling party in Mars, obviously. That's what it seems like. It's not going to be an American flag. It's going to be a SpaceX flag. And I'll let people decide. Yeah.
I thought he was going to conquer Mars for America. Maybe I read that wrong, but I thought Elon had mentioned that he wanted like Mars.
Yeah, but what if he's actually starting to colonization of Mars? That is a fascinating discussion to have, because it's like, okay, if Mars is American, then I think that's going to reduce some of the friction. But if it gets to a point, because then you have to, this is such a crazy discussion, right? by the time that starts to happen, we're going to live through the middle of the transition towards the AI economy, which is going to mean that humans are going to be displaced by AIs and robots in a lot of ways. What is the vibe going to be for humans to be like, we support the guy that put us out of work to colonize Mars? Just a question. Just something to think about, okay? But the nation state angle I'm thinking about. Okay, so if you...
Yeah, it's like, do we rather Elon and Tesla, an American company, puts us out of work or Chinese bots?
But that's not how people think.
You know, and so that's what people don't realize is this inevitability right. is coming. And you're reminding me of a thing I was reading this morning about Waymo, Wayno. That's what people are saying in Seattle about Waymo. Like they don't like a Waymo announces coming to Seattle and everyone's like, this is, and I'm like, okay. So
such a progressive city.
This is my worst nightmare. This is my worst nightmare. Like I grew up in Seattle, tech friendly city. Why is Seattle yeah. even successful? Because of the internet and technology with Amazon and Microsoft. Like that's been the backbone of Seattle's growth. And we have so many tech savvy people here, so many smart people here, but the woke politics has shown completely irrational. And so I think Waymo will still be able to launch here, but that's such an interesting, and I think that's one thing that I've been bubbling up is like, what's the next Tesla bear thesis after we can get Elon Musk's shares? The Luddite movement is the biggest Tesla. That is what I think 100%. Is the biggest Tesla bear thesis, is Bernie Sanders and all these people just being like pointing 100%. The blame at Tesla and Elon Musk. And I think that as an investor, as an analyst, like that's, I don't think I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist for thinking that's a reality. Like that's already happening. They're already beating that drum and we haven't even gotten to the point of it, working yet. So it's, to me, that's going to be I think the way it'll bifurcate is society will split. There will be people who refuse robots and want to continue to live in like, yeah, just kind of cities without robots where they do things the old way. No shade to the Amish, because I think the Amish people are on.
They got something figured out.
Their own vibes going. But kind of like that, you know, like people live in their own community and they live with their own set of rules. And so I think that will happen. And then you'll have these ultra techie people like us and people who are kind of embracing technology in the future. And they will move to cities. Like there may be a bifurcation of like, Seattle is going to get left behind. We're an anti-robot city. Sure. Like we are going to give, you know, and it's, and then the people like me will have to move. And I think that's actually like potentially a 50-50 chance of that kind of happening. So, and that's the one thing that Elon's biggest weakness is predicting the stupid people's response to his smart moves. And how much, you know, like how
that's
much
so well said
for all this stuff. You know what I mean? So it's like, I feel like that is one thing that maybe he's undercalculating is how do we navigate when that happens? Or I don't know. It's just an interesting thing that's been on my mind. I've never would have thought the company I'm investing in's biggest issue would be that it's changing the world so radically that people were literally like revolt and become Luddites. So
yeah, I think that's 100% agree. And I think it's the only outcome when you do that. That's the only outcome is. This, I mean, we already saw the journey of the company up to this point had to go through some significant hurdles to get here. And now it's not going to be like, oh, they've made it. Everything is sunshines and rainbows. No, the stakes are only getting bigger. And there will always be a response to what the company is trying to achieve. And it's not up to us to decide if it's like they're being rational or irrational. That's what they're going to do regardless. Because we are not them, right? They have every right to act in their own self-interest, however they view their self-interest to be. But it's inevitable for that outcome to happen precisely because of what the dynamic you just outlined is people. So there's a lot of people out there. We don't know what the number is going to be. I think the number is probably going to be in the minority, but it's going to be large enough that it's going to cause a significant amount of friction, but you know, Elon calls it the supersonic tsunami. The tsunami is coming anyway, and the choice you'll have is to either ride it or just be left behind, you know. Or in their eyes, maybe they're not left behind. They're like, no, we want to keep the life that we have now. Okay, perfect. That's great. So then, when you go to Austin, you know, you'll be like, holy shit, this Tesla ecosystem. I'm going to be able to pay, I don't know, $100 or whatever, $500 a month. And the Tesla ecosystem, I'm going to have bots and robo-taxis at my disposal anytime I want. And I can just go $500 a month, unlimited access to human or robots, unlimited access or whatever, $1,000 a month, unlimited access to human or robots, unlimited access to transportation, unlimited access to energy. Go down the list, right? And then that becomes a value proposition of Tesla. It's like, hey, we're an ecosystem for humans. We use artificial intelligence to let you move around for you know, basically free, as long as you pay a monthly subscription. You move around as much as you want. And then if you need help with whatever, we'll send human or robots. You can have your own human or robot. This human or robot can basically do anything that you could do. And it will, you know, give you a hand here and there. Oh, by the way, we're going to pair this subscription with the Starlink subscription. So you get connectivity as well. Oh, sick. And then this ecosystem starts to appear where as long as you're paying, you know, you're paying X dollars per month. And then what you get back is the next generation of being a human and existing in this world with sustainable wow. abundance, right? That's where I think we're wow. going. And that over time, that like becomes a nation state because that nation.
Tesla is a nation state.
That's what it becomes.
I know I'm seeing the vision because it's like the supercharger network kind of reminds me of that. Like it's such a tiny example of like no one could figure it out, even though everyone, you know, and then what happens? They have to cave and Tesla's standard essentially becomes a government.
Right.
You know, standard that everyone uses for society. And so it's so interesting to play that out a little further of that could happen with Tesla's full self-driving technology. Like it might be like, I could see a world where Tesla has such an advantage for self-driving data that it becomes almost a no-brainer for Trump. And they're like licensing out to everyone for Trump or whoever's president to almost nationalize that technology and be like, everyone should have this technology. Tesla's full self-driving is what every car uses, and it becomes like the American full self-driving technology standard because it's just so much safer than everything else. And I could see that cascading on other things, robot safety, robot, you know, all the hesitations about robots. Maybe Tesla sets a standard that everyone else eventually caves to. So I get the Farzad analogy. Tesla becomes a nation state. And I think I see it.
We'll see. I mean, and I think with enough time, I think that's inevitable. And so the question becomes, how will the people that will inevitably be left without work directly correlate that were holding positions of work that are no longer competitive in the market because there's an digital or physical equivalent that's powered by artificial intelligence that can do that job much better, much faster, much safer, much cheaper? What will happen to those people? How will they transition into this new age? Will they embrace the technology? Will they even have the means to embrace the technology? Right? That's the transition. And the thing, and this thing keeps going in my head, and I made a video about this actually on Friday, that on that Joe Rogan pod, I believe this is the first time we've ever heard Elon directly talk about the transition to sustainable abundance. There was a line he said on the Rogan podcast. Mm-hmm. He said, there will be trauma and disruption along the way. There will be trauma and disruption along the way. I don't know if you remember that, that line that he made. When Elon says that, and he's the one that's leading the sustainable abundance, okay? And this is a thesis I've had on this channel for a while. We will not be able to escape the harsh reality that the next 5 to 20 years are going to be fraught with a lot of upheaval and a lot of complications and complex situations and potentially violence. I don't think we escape that at all. I think the ultimate state is reached after a period of massive disruption. And I don't think that disruption is going to be smooth. I think that we're gonna come to a point where countries will have to do something drastic, like a UBI. I think a UBI, a true UBI, will only be a response to millions of people in the United States borderline about to turn violent and try to overthrow the government. And then the population will be pleased once the government's like, okay, fine, we get it. Like the AI stuff's happening too fast. You don't have a job. You can't afford anything. These AI things, I get it. Like your town's not adopting this. I get it. Like this sucks. This is insane. Okay, we're going to just $3,000 a month. Everybody gets $3,000 a month. How are we going to fund it? Who cares? Just print the money. Otherwise, our nation collapses. Okay? I think that's the kind of future we're about to have. And what's crazy is on one side, we're going to have that. And on the other side, we're going to be colonizing Mars. We're going to have freaking robotaxis everywhere. We're going to have humanoid robots that are unbelievably capable. We're going to have LLMs that are going to be able to solve science and solve physics, right? I don't think we get that without the other thing. There has to be a yin and a yang. The yin is like unbelievable progress. The yang is going to be the disruption once the humans that were working on that progress are no longer viable. Because our work in those places are no longer going to be needed. It's like literally, I hate to use this analogy, when we transition from horses to cars, okay? We had millions of horses, basically, in the United States. Once we put the horses out of a job, what happened to the horse population? It collapsed.
Went down, maybe? I don't know.
It collapsed to like less than 1% of the yeah. horse population we had before. Because we no longer needed the horses. So the question becomes, when we no longer need the humans to do the work, what happens? That transition is not going to be, it is not going to be smooth. And when Elon says it's not going to be smooth, I think that's confirmation that it's not going to be smooth. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's to play the optimistic side of it, part of it is very exciting though, because of how much I feel like your agency is so powerful now. Like if you want to do something and have a new idea, it's you can run with it so fast and it's so powerful. And I feel like I've been benefiting that with so much of my 100%. Life of like, I don't know, like buying real estate. I bought my first real estate and that was like, I could not have done it without AI, you know,
nice. Astro,
shout out. you know, it's like all these crazy things of like my tea business, like all the kind of things I'm scheming with that. So to me, like I've had these dreams of like running distributed farms and growing artisanal food. And that's always something I've wanted to do and be really passionate about. And I didn't have a way to do, like, it just felt like it would never happen, honestly. And then now as I've kind of like grown up to the age of AI, I'm like, wait, like I'm gonna do this. Like I'm gonna have my robots. Like I'm gonna like buy land. Like it is possible. Like I have enough resources to do this. And like, I have the vision. So it's, I feel like in some ways for an entrepreneurial minded people, there's so much excitement and potential to rewrite how things are done. And we think about, you know, the food system is today, like how many people eat things that are bad for them, that aren't healthy, that are old, that aren't distributed well. Like we just, there's massive potential to reinvent these things. So I don't think it's a bad system to remove all monocrop farming and, you know, re-kind of distribute how we grow and food. But that will come with the trauma and chaos. So it's so interesting to me where it feels like you're powerless. Some people may feel like they're powerless in the wake of this AI revolution when they don't realize, because of all this change, when they don't realize that they actually have all the power and it's their choice to participate in it or not. And it's kind of like you write your own history here. Like, do you want to be the person who missed out and avoids AI? Like my Italian cousin, Luca, who I love, but he won't even use AI because he's like, malacqua, like the water usage, troppo acqua, no, ma, ChatGPT, no. Like that's literally the conversation now. I'm like, Luca, I was like, bro, you are getting left behind. We are using ChatGPT to figure this out right now. And like, what do you mean water? Like what, bro? Like, and I couldn't even believe that. He's like actively like not using AI because of water usage. And I'm like, bro,
that's,
what the heck?
That doesn't make
like,
any sense.
So that's a real thing.
Yeah.
But so I kind of get excited. And I feel like Elon is such an embodiment of that, of leveraging all of these powerful things and being on the offense. You know, it's like almost like the best defense is the offense. Like you got to move fast and do the next thing. And so 100%. I'm excited about it. I think.
Yeah. And I'm very happy you have that mindset. And I share that mindset as well. I think what's going to be important as well, though, is to ensure that I believe that the number of people that will be impacted negatively from the transition is going to be significant. I don't think it's going to be the majority, but I think it's going to be more than 1%, maybe less than 20%, but it's going to be a lot more than 1%. And 1% of, call it 330 million people, right? That's 3 million. You know, that's 3 million people are going to be impacted quite negatively. That's a lot of people. That's a lot. And it's going to be way more than that, in my opinion. So, but your point is the perfect one, which is like, hey, this new ecosystem we're building as a society has a ton of positives. As long as you are willing to embrace it for what it is, which is a tool. It's a tool to make your life better. It's a tool to be really creative with creating solutions that we could have never done before, right? But then the opposite side of the equation becomes, okay, how do we ensure that those the people that would benefit from that are aware that this thing actually can help them use the tools to make a better life for themselves, aware? And the second one is, how do we ensure that we as a society teach folks how to actually implement these things in their daily lives, right? One of the things I'm seeing on YouTube lately, which I hate to see, is there's a lot of, like, you know, this is why AI is bad for you content. And it's a lot of, like, commentary, like, and they're pretty popular, hundreds of thousands of views and from varied people. It's like, oh, look, Amazon, you know, laid off 30,000 people because of AI. This is why AI is bad for you. And then in the comment section, there's fucking oligarchs, you know, Jeff Bezos is a scumbag, et cetera, et cetera. So it's being weaponized. It's being weaponized. And in the age of social media and the media like landscape that we live in now, the negatives are going to be the things that are going to be try to be accelerated through society. So but what you're saying is, I love it, which is we need the positive content. We need the, you know, here one of the ideas I had once human robots become, you know, hopefully I can buy a few. Like, I want to take these and take them down to the most run down places of the city or their country. And let's just go help them build shit. Let's go help them rebuild their city. Right. Let's come up with a way to, like, put these robots to work to make that little pocket of civilization that has been hurting for decades. How can this technology make their lives better? Maybe we'll just help people carry their groceries, you know, like. Can we just donate 100 humanoid robots to a county or a city or a township or even an HOA community, something where the robots just, maybe they make the community a little bit cleaner. They do the lawn work, right? Like, actually bring hope to society that says, look, this technology is, like, here to actually be doing useful things. I think that's one. The results, the actual results from the technology have to be positive for the people that don't think it can be positive. And that's how you change the narrative. Mm-hmm. Is how do we get those technologies in front of people that are doubtful that this is going to be helpful or have been negatively impacted by it, and then be like, hey, look, it actually is better. It's actually better. You know, hopefully we can do that. Hopefully we can do it. Because I think that's the only way we get to, like Elon says, a benign scenario. We have to go through that process where people that don't believe in this or were negatively impacted by this experience it. And then they're like, wait, this is actually better. Okay, I'm on board. That's the way you make that happen.
I want the robot. Yeah. And I think that's people are smart. I feel like people change their mind once they experience things and get out of the internet. So maybe that will be a big moment where people are like, wait, technology is helping me. Like, look at this thing that's in my life that's adding all this value, that's, you know, helping me move about my day or helping me care for my grandma or something that really means something to you. And then... yeah, I think that will be a big moment, because I think the internet, a big thing that I'm more concerned about is, like, I don't know how to phrase it other than, like, everyone thinks they know everything right now. And I think that's a huge problem. It's like, no matter what issue or thing happens, you have an opinion on it, and then you have to be an expert on it and hold your opinion and argue with people and get mad about it. When the reality is, like, we know nothing. Like, we're just manipulated by, like, these pixels of our tiny screen or our big screen or our super big screen. And then that programs our brain to feel a certain way. So I feel like that's a very, like, dangerous kind of place to be in, but also because the negativity seems to travel faster. So I don't know. I'm kind of, like, at a loss for it. And the UBI kind of, like, everyone can get anything, like Andreessen Horowitz and Elon Musk sometimes talk about this future of, like, AI utopia, like the cost of everything goes to zero. Like, that, if that truly happens, like, maybe that would be a good thing. And that would really change people's minds, like the cost of food and water. But for some reason, I'm, like, skeptical that that will occur. And I feel like people will hoard resources and there won't be an even distribution. It will kind of be like how the internet made it so you could be a billionaire super fast, like no time in history. It would take you like, you know, decades to conquer continents to have that kind of wealth. And now you got, like, Mark Zuckerberg like that, you know? And then Sam Altman was saying you could have the first billionaire founder with one person, billion-dollar company. Maybe my team, I don't know.
Hell yeah.
But those kind of things are like, whoa. And I don't see it getting in the bag. It's like, it's hyper change. Like, this is only getting crazier. Like, it's only going to, soon it'll be a one guy with a $1 trillion company. if he has the best AI. So it's going to be, it's going to be crazy. But I think that what gives me a little hope is I think the slower things happen, the better. So hopefully this iterative feedback loop with Optimus, it just, people ease into it. Like Sam Altman was, had some interesting talks about how it's like AGI is kind of here and no one's freaking out. Like we all thought there was this kind of going to be like this freak out moment, but really it's just integrated into our lives. It's like, well, it's kind of like Google, but better, you know? And that's kind of what's happened. So we adjust so, so quickly.
I think one of the interesting data points we have now about that is there was a study that came out that said something like 95% of companies, and it was an MIT study, 95% of companies that were trying to implement AI into their businesses saw a flat to negative results from implementing AI. And that says more about the businesses than the tools, right? Because I use AI all the time for my stuff, and it's made me vastly more efficient. Research, editing, everything I do. Like I use AI all moving around the city. I use artificial intelligence, FSD, right? And it frees up my mental capacity to think about ideas and stuff and chat with Grok and whatever. So it has helped me tremendously. So this says more about the culture that we've built into these businesses versus the technology itself. So that by default will slow down the transition because most businesses will not know how to deploy these tools. And what's going to happen is we're going to have a wave of new businesses that come in that are AI native, that are built from the ground up with AI, that start taking market share, right? So that by default is going to slow down the transition instead of every business magically knowing how to implement AI and then firing everybody. That clearly is not going to happen. But the other thing is going to happen. New businesses are going to be built and going to start eating into those businesses, you know? And that will take longer. You know, that will take longer. So like, you know, one of the examples I like to use locally here is the landscaping company. It's unlikely that a landscaping company is going to be hiring human or robots to do the work, most of them. What's going to happen is there's going to be a landscaping company, brand new one, maybe Farzad's Lawn Care. I'm going to have a staff of 10 human or robots, and I'm just going to go around and freaking do everyone's lawns and do everyone's landscaping, and I'm just going to deploy the robots to do all that stuff, right? And then I'm going to be able to charge half to a third of what anybody else charges because the labor of the human or robot is going to be way less, you know? So, and I think that's what's going to happen. I think it's going to be new businesses coming in disrupting versus existing businesses adopting AI, which is it's the innovator's dilemma.
I like that.
It doesn't matter how obvious it is.
Yeah, that's
it's just not going to happen. Yeah.
And that's why there is so much opportunity right now. And I feel like the incumbents, they don't want to disrupt themselves. They're too slow. And they're going to get, but I actually think it will happen fast. Like, I think they're just going to get blindsided. Yeah. And it's crazy how Optimus becomes like the picks and shovels of this gold rush. It's almost like there's so many, once you get your Optimus, there's so many ways to focus and optimize them and create value. I think it'll be kind of like the Wild West on how to use it and who's creating what kind of business and where to, there's almost going to be too much opportunity, too much to do with your Optimus. You don't want them to waste 9 hours cutting and drying the parsley. Yeah. There's better stuff it could do, you know? So there's going to be an entirely new wave of businesses that are where the labor is totally replaced by the humanoid. And that's like I keep coming back to farming and food, but that's just the example of labor. Like the businesses where we have so much labor, I think are like the first ones that kind of, well, actually Elon said something interesting where that if you sit behind a computer all day, you're going to get disrupted by AI like lightning fast. But if you're doing something in the real world, it'll actually take longer, which is, I think that's like been the funniest switch since ChatGPT came out is we all thought like the coders and like the designers were like the most tech savvy people. And then it turns out it's like the plumbers and like, you know, like baristas or something that might last the longest. And so actually my girlfriend does paint and sip classes. And I was thinking, that might be one of the last things that might never get disrupted because people want to go for fun and watch them. And I was thinking, this might be the best job
the human experience, like humans interacting with each other will boom. And the reason why is because the friction to go from one point to another, to be with another human is going to lower because of very cheap transportation.
And we'll have more time
on our hands. So humans are going to start congregating a lot more, which is a beautiful thing. That's ultimately what we want. It's like that's how humanity gets closer. I think the social media age drove us apart, and now the AI age is going to bring us back together. One will hope, right? And that's one of the potentials of that. It's like we had sort of this rubber band effect. It's like we were close. Then smartphones and social media went like this, division like crazy, and then AI makes it very easy and frictionless to get together, because instead of, you know, going to this event that you have to find parking for and it's super expensive to get there and it's a pain in the ass, right? All of a sudden, a cyber cab is like what? It's right there around the corner and it's like $5, and you get in there with another person, it's $2 to get there. You don't have to worry about parking. It just drops you off. You can freaking have the best time of your life. Come back to the cyber cab by yourself, take a nap in there while it takes you home, and it costs $2. Boom. Solved. You know?
It's gonna be like it was so hard to do stuff.
Exactly, and then those events and everything. There's gonna be a bunch of humanoids helping you with stuff, helping you carry stuff. They're gonna help you point you around. They're gonna be doing cool, you know, arts and crafts and whatever. Maybe whatever, you can bring your own human. I don't know, whatever. Like, it gets kind of crazy at that point. But it's going to remove the friction to be a human. That's the beautiful thing about this technology. And humans tend to like to be around other humans, and that's gonna be exciting. That will definitely happen. Yeah. The thing we have to work on is ensuring that happens in as many places as possible that want it. If people don't want it, we shouldn't be forcing them to take it either. But then we should also highlight the positives of adopting this technology, because ultimately it's going to give us such an opportunity to make the human experience better, I think. As long as the companies don't run amok, right?
Yeah.
that's where it gets weird.
Yeah.
That's where we have to be very careful. So.
Yeah. That's why I'm worried who runs that.
100%.
But anyway, discussion for another time.
Where can people find you, Gally?
I'm on X, at G Filchi, or Hyperchange, my YouTube channel. So always scheming there. So, covering Tesla, thinking about the future, thinking about all this crazy, weird sci-fi stuff. So. Thanks
always
for having
a great
me,
time,
Farzad.
Dude. Like, every time you come on, I feel like my brain always is like firing out of like all cylinders, because it's like, it's so fun scheming with you, Gally. It's great.
Yeah, no, I love it. I had a blast, and I think it's hard to think through all these crazy things that are happening. So it's fun to noodle on it, because I think it's coming a lot faster than people think, and it's gonna be a lot weirder than people think.
I think that's a perfect way of putting it.
Yeah.